Yeah, it's qualified. Shout out to my young homie Cash.
What up?
And the Far Out Kids.
Yeah.
Cash money, you know what we talking about. Gather round, tune in, we about to talk it out. Charizard playing spitting, now it's going down. How many kids with their own podcast? I hold the crown, something like a Mewtwo.
Hi, this is Cash. In March, you'll be able to listen to my podcast. We'll come out with our first episode.
What's it called, Cash?
Far Out Kids Cast.
And what are we going to be talking about?
Lots of stuff, like movies, music, and all my favorite things, including video games.
Oh, and video games, huh? And will we have guests?
Yes, we will, including my brother Weston. So we'll be having guests from bands. We'll be having guests from
some of your favorite movies, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And we're definitely going to have on the maker of your theme song, my friend Qualified, and his kid, right?
Uh-huh.
So it'll be a lot of fun. So tune in March for our first episode of
Far Out Kids Cast.
The Far Out Kids Cast.
It's a Saturday night if you wanna see a show. Well, I know a place where we can all go. So come on, baby, and take a ride with me. We'll dance under the moonlight and be who we wanna be.
Hey, just a brief little update here. This podcast episode was recorded almost 2 weeks ago now. Unfortunately, I had a hard time getting the editing done, as happens sometimes, because life and laziness, and you can blame me however you'd like. However, I just wanted to let you know that Heidi Moore was an awesome interview, and we have an upcoming episode that's going to air later this same week with one of my buddies, Madeline Costner from Philadelphia Underground Film Festival. You might know her as a writer from Fango and Diabolique and a whole bunch of different places. So she's just really rad. And these are our last two women in horror that are probably going to make it out this month. But we have one more episode that's going to probably be coming out sometime in early March with Rebecca McKendry as well. So Women in Horror Month is going to easily stretch into March a little bit. And then we have episodes with Ted Geo, the director of Mohawk, as well as Marcus Cook is going to be on that episode, who did all the effects on that film, as well as was brought up in previous podcasts because he is actually the roommate of Stephen Bureau and does films with him. So very excited to have those folks on. And we have, all types of stuff coming up. Actor and director Greg Travis. Then we have Daniel Francesi, and man, it just goes on and on. And those are just the next few guests. We're starting to book out quite a ways away because we just have a lot of awesome people who want to be on the podcast, and we really appreciate it. So I'm done mumbling. I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks to our folks and friends who listen, you folks out there, as well as our sponsor Vinegar Syndrome. And you'll hear us thank them a few times because they're awesome and they send us awesome movies to check out. And on the next episode that we get recorded, hopefully we'll get a chance to cover a few of them. We've been a little strapped for time, and so we haven't got a chance to really bug out on them as much as we'd like to. We did talk about Penitentiary because that movie's freaking all that. But, man, I said I was dumb rambling like almost a minute ago. I should probably just stick to that. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care. And enjoy the show.
Everybody, to another episode of Grindhouse Messiah. I am Blaine, your bald and beautiful co-host, and with me is the happiest boy in all of Pennsylvania. How's it going, Justin?
I am pretty happy, although I can't claim to be the happiest. I think pretty much the entire eastern half of our state is pretty ecstatic right now as the Eagles have won the Super Bowl, and we're all kind of glowing right now. So I'm not going to pretend that I'm not in a stellar mood. I am indeed. So thank you for that wonderful intro, Blaine. And before we introduce our guest, let's just quickly thank our sponsor, Vinegar Syndrome, who very kindly shipped us over the January monthly package, and we got a chance to check out a couple films. I have only gotten a chance to dig into Penitentiary so far, which is, Jama Fanaka? Does that sound right?
Jama Fanaka, founding members of the LA film movement. Yeah, man, I love this movie. I was really excited to get an actual Blu-ray copy because it's one of those things that, once again, like we always talk about with Vinegar Syndrome, I had a real shitty bootleg of it over the years. And, you know, one of those movies that would kind of come on, you know, late night TV and stuff. But no, it's finally a good looking copy. What did you think since this is your first time watching it?
Well, I'm actually kind of happy that maybe I never got to see a crappy bootleg copy because this looks pretty fantastic. I thought that it looked really good, the film. You know, they did a good job with the restoration and stuff. It looked fantastic. As far as the film itself, you know, I'm a sucker for blaxploitation. You know that we both are big fans of last year's, Craig Zahler film, Brawl in Cell Block 99. And this feels like very inspirational for Zahler in that film. And it's basically, you know, a lot of good fighting, some good prison exploitation and blaxploitation goodness. I mean, it's really just got, it's got all the stuff that you would want in for that kind of stuff, you know, as far as it goes. I don't want to get too deep into it because I really would love to do an episode on it. So we'll definitely have to return to it to really like dig into it. But man, I definitely really enjoyed it, and I'm really excited that Vinegar Syndrome is putting out the second Penitentiary next month, because why the hell can't, you know, why not? Why not dive right into it? And if I remember correctly, I feel like the second one actually might have Mr. T in it.
Mr. T is in it. It is a canon movie. It's batshit fucking crazy.
Oh, shit.
Because that's one thing
so
I love.
So it's going to take what I like about this film and just ramp it up to, like, a zillion percent.
Well, where Penitentiary is a relatively kind of smart, woke, fun right. movie, Penitentiary 2 is batshit crazy. It's real dumb. It takes everything that's smart about the first one and actually makes it, like, way fucking dumber. But I love, but it's a lot of fun. And Part 3 is even stranger because it's all new actors. I think Cannon sold it to somebody else. Jama Fanaka's got nothing to do with it. We're not even in prison anymore. It's still a lot of fun.
But it's still called Penitentiary.
Huh? Oh hell yeah, it's still Penitentiary 3. I don't know why they held on to that franchise, but it's a lot of fun. I don't know. Did you get a chance to check out Fugitive Girls yet?
I have not sitting there on my shelf. It's actually, if I believe, it might actually be sitting in my Blu-ray player right now, but I have not pressed play yet. So what do you think of that one, Blaine?
Oh, Future Girls, it is, it's something I'd never seen before. It's made by your favorite guy, A.C. Stevens, who, you know, usually worked with Ed Wood Jr., who gets a writing credit on here. And it's you know, it's kind of, it's a women in prison movie, but it's like their prison really isn't a prison. It's more like a strange day camp with foxy ladies always pulling each other's hair, but it is super rapey. It is, I don't know, it falls in line. As much as you hate Orgy of the Dead, I don't think you're gonna like this much more. It's about 25 minutes too long. It's nearly an hour and 45 minutes, so it's, but either way, they pack a whole lot of fun stuff on it. I'm excited to see anything by A.C. Steven at this point, just because it's so sleazy. Like, it doesn't try to, like, put on any kind of airs about it. There's no pretension. Just crazy dumb and sleazy. So, it's a lot of fun, and it was great. Over the last weekend, I ended up popping in the Days of Dead and spending some time with James over at Vinegar Syndrome, and I do love spending time with that scumbag. So, you know, hey, thanks again for the sponsor, and we'll just keep looking forward to what we get in the future, man.
Yeah, and we got another title from them that I don't think either of us had a chance to watch yet. Did you get a chance to watch the third title yet?
No, not yet. The
it's like
Lucifer's
it's got
Lemon.
Like two names. It's yeah. got like
it's Dracula's
it's got
Curse
two names.
And Dracula's
yeah,
Curse.
I don't even know.
Yes,
we're really great for our sponsor not being able to even name the movie. That's fantastic. But we will talk about it next episode, so we'll make up for it.
I got the name, man. It's Women of Lucifer and Curse of Dracula.
Go. Lucifer's Women. Lucifer's yeah. Women. There we go.
So yeah, so terrible.
With that in mind, I think that's a signal that it's time to move into our next segment, God, which yeah. would be introducing our guest. So without any further ado, Miss Heidi Moore, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Okay, hi, I'm Heidi Moore. I'm the owner of Wretched Productions. I make dark comedy, horror. I've been told it's called bizarro horror. I don't really know what that means, but weird shit, I guess.
That's fair, weird shit. I would say the one film I have seen of yours so far, which we'll be talking about later, is definitely under the category of weird shit.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I was really excited to get you on the show because I don't know if you knew this, but I guess probably about 4 or 5 months ago, when we did our recommendations, when we did our coverage of John Waters, I actually suggested your film Dolly Deadly, which, you know, as you said before, we'll talk about. But it was definitely fitting for that episode, and definitely one of my favorite indie filmmakers. And we're so excited to have you on for Women in Horror Month.
Oh well, I didn't know that. That's exciting. I need to look that up. Well, I try not to pay too much attention because I'm really used to it now, but when I first started making movies that were getting out to the public more, you know, you put yourself out there for a lot of ridicule.
Right.
And so at first, I just got in the habit of not even paying attention to anything that people are saying. So.
Well, and you know what? I think as an independent filmmaker, maybe you can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you basically just hit on it. I think a lot of people who don't watch a lot of independent film and don't get a lot of independent film try to put these films up against the high budget, you know, Hollywood stuff, and then look at them and go, "Oh, that doesn't look good." Well,
yeah.
When I don't have $100 million, I have $10. What do you expect? You know, so I think that. As Blaine and I and folks like us who watch a lot of independent film, a lot of low budget, micro budget stuff, we get that aesthetic and we get what that is. And so, you know, while we can appreciate that, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there that are trashing films like yours who just don't get it.
Oh yeah. You can tell. 'Cause now I'm fine. I can look at the reviews. Like there's all kinds of great reviews, but I'm just fine seeing the bad reviews. And they're actually really funny because you can tell they just don't get it. Or they'll be like, "I hate this movie. Everyone was so trashy and it was depressing." I'm like, "Oh, thank you. Like that's what we were trying to do."
Right.
And that's funny you bring that, because the first time I watched it, I remember, like, kind of just because, you know, like, being a dad and, like, seeing the kids picking on, like, I remember it was, like, a little hard for me to watch. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I like these people. But, you know, like, but that's the fun of that movie. And I don't want to jump into it too much, because we are going to go into it more. So if you don't mind, I mean, we're going to, you know, cover a film that you brought up that you wanted to discuss that was directed by a woman. That was A Girl Who Walks Home Alone at Night, the Anna Lily I'm a Poor film. What was the reason that you wanted to cover that film in particular?
بشه کجا بودی؟
ای دختر
در تاریکی کنده قد
منو نمیدونی
چیزی که میبینی
از چی هستی؟
اگه الان یه دونه طوفان می اومد یه دونه طوفان خیلی شدید از پشت اون کوها چیزی عوض می شد؟
I just watched it today and I was like, okay. Yeah, and I think it's what I like about it is that I feel like that the girl, the vampire girl, a lot. And it's like, I don't ever, she just walks around, hangs out by herself, and she's like really awkward and she doesn't like to respond to anybody when they're talking to her. And I just like can really relate, I guess.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, yeah. Definitely, I mean, like, throughout the whole thing, it's incredibly quiet and awkward, but, hey, Justin, why don't you give us a quick run-through, and just for all the people out there who may not have seen the film yet.
All right, so, I usually make you do this, so you put me on the spot, which is totally fair. It's totally fair, but I'm going to have to think about this, because, you know, you remember, I've only seen this movie once. I actually just watched it about a week and a half ago, and, as you're well aware, at first I didn't like it. I paused it, took a little break, came back to it, ended up liking it a pretty decent amount after that, which was, you know, I'm glad that I stepped back and forced myself to go back into it, because I don't know, you know, I almost walked away from it going, it stinks, but it obviously doesn't. And so with that in mind, the premise of the film, geez, I'm bad at this. All right.
Okay, in the Iranian ghost town of Bad City.
No, I'm coming. All right. So, in the Iranian ghost town of Bad City, you're just reading it. You are. You're just totally reading it, you cheater. You know how I know? Because I'm reading it, too.
Yeah, it's fucking IMDb. Why wouldn't we use that?
Yeah, but there's only, like, two sentences. So, that's not going to help me very much. In the Iranian ghost town of Bad City, a place that reeks of death and loneliness, the townspeople are unaware that they're being stalked by a lonesome vampire. Actually, that kind of summarizes it pretty good in only a couple sentences. It's a really interesting take on the vampire story in which the girl walking home alone at night that you see in the picture of all the artwork is not actually, you know, the poor girl who's going to be stalked, but she's actually the one kind of doing the stalking. So it's a really interesting take on kind of flipping the script in that way, and that's what I ended up liking about the film, is it's very much about this main girl who I don't remember, she's just called the girl, correct?
She's called the girl, yeah.
The girl. She basically, what I love about it is that she's seemingly this meek, not very, you know, she's smaller in stature, not a very large woman. Maybe historically in films, somebody built like her would be the prey, but she is not the prey in any stretch of the imagination. And I think that is what I really ended up liking about the film, is it puts the narrative on its head and puts her in the driver's seat. And so basically she is the stalking vampire that people have no idea is there. And that's essentially the setup of the film. And several people try to, use her and find themselves not getting away with that. Several people, lose their lives. I would say that the kill that jumps out at me is, I believe the character's name was, I think he is just the pimp. Maybe he was just called the pimp. What was that?
Saeed,
okay. Yeah, the drug dealing pimp guy. Wow, man. When she turns on him, it is brilliant. And that was the first part of the movie that I liked. And like I told you, it kind of got slow. But then I came back to it, and I really just liked where they went with it after that. So if I can be completely honest about the film, I'd say it was a little slow for me, a little bit artsy for me at times. But the film as a whole really did work. Blaine, what do you have to add about my rambly nonsense of a introduction there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it's one of those movies, like, I kind of knew going into it I was going to like the film. I mean, most people who know me know that I'm not real concerned with, heavy dialogue or story. It kind of just fit the aesthetic that I like, which, combine this concept of, like, kind of this black and white, this black and white matting of this imaginary city, kind of this Fellini, kind of take on reality, plus shooting the whole fucking thing like a 70mm John Ford Western is just so up my alley. And what I knew I was going to like that, but going into the film, I really liked that at its core, it was just kind of, as much as it's focusing around these, negative situations, it's kind of the story of two relatively innocent people in that world. As much as she's a vampire and killing folks, she still has that air of innocence as well as the boy. And it just turns into kind of this series of moments where you get these little vignettes in between, the woman dancing with the balloon. You get these great little, almost musical interludes with a lot of fun stuff popping up, really incredibly, diverse soundtrack, which, as much as I love scores, it's, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I kind of miss soundtracks, and it kind of brings that in. It uses it in a way that doesn't, date the film at all. But, I mean, I really liked it. I mean, a lot of stuff in there you could argue doesn't really work. It goes in some directions that it doesn't really pick back up on, especially with some of the outlying characters. But, I mean, it really was almost a little too up my alley. I mean, even, shooting the whole damn thing in Farsi, just right up my alley. So I've revisited it a few times, and I just continue to like it more and more. And this time I got a chance to kind of show it to someone who had no idea about it, and they loved it as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those movies I like to revisit. And, I mean, really, I wish more filmmakers would try to, shoot in that wide frame John Ford style, because people like me will always be suckers for it. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of my opinion on that. Heidi, what were some of the things in it that have kind of stuck with you over the years?
Well, I really like that it's like this dystopian world. It's just like we're just walking around, just watching people's lives, and it's like, just watching what they're doing, seeing how they feel. Like people, the dad who's the heroin addict, and then the son who has to deal with it, the woman who's the prostitute. I just really love observing people. And so it's like kind of like you just get to like don't have to listen to all like this dialogue. You just get to kind of like watch people's lives. And I really like that that death scene with the drug dealer. That's actually one of my favorite death scenes. I should have brought that up in my documentary coming up. But I just love it. He's such a creep. He's such a fucking creep. And I feel like he does the actor, the guy, he does really well in his part. He's like trying to be, dance all sexy and seduce her, and then she's just standing there unaffected and she's kind of walking around. And then, you know, I don't know, I just love it because it's kind of, we don't have to worry about all the dialogue. We're just watching these two people interact. And then, you know, of course he gets killed, which is, you know, rewarding after we just watch him be such fucking sleaze.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like a good way to introduce her with the violence, because you do want to root. You realize right away, like, okay, this is the girl who walks home alone at night. You want to root for her, and it's great for her, for this kill to be like, you know, someone that nobody likes. and it's, you know, like you said, it's satisfying. And I do get a kick at, Justin and I had talked about this off air, but the fact that he looks just like Ninja from D'Angelo.
Oh, yeah, totally. Was that on purpose, do you think?
See, that's what we were talking about. Maybe that dude's a real scumbag in real life or something and wanted to take the piss out of him. But
I think that might be like a stereotype also.
No, very much.
It's like a type, you know, like there's, you know, like different types, like where there's like, you know, goth type of people, or, you know, it's, I think that's like sometimes in these kind of movies, there's things get lost in translation, but I do think that's like a type.
No.
And what's kind of interesting,
his look was specifically based on Ninja, not his character, but his look. She did base his look on Ninja. I read that in an interview after you and I talked, Blaine.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we were talking about that, and I had to look it up. And she did say that if I remember correctly, she said that she was always a fan of their aesthetic, and she just wanted to use that in a character and just felt like it fit him. And she's like, she was very specific, if I remember reading in the review, that had nothing to do with the character, that he's not like that. That she knows, she did not, you know, she didn't design his, you know, assholeness over it, just his look. So
yeah, when I was watching it today, I was like, oh, what is wrong with me? Because I was like, that guy's kind of sexy. I'm like, just stop. I see that shows my personality and my ability to choose.
Yeah. You know. You totally ended up picking the villain of the movie.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. But yeah, no, I mean, the other thing, I mean, we totally went blank there. You're gonna be editing a lot this episode, but
think I'm leaving in everything that you mess up and taking out everything that I mess up. That's how it goes.
All right, let's start again. But yeah, I mean, kind of with the way this film, you know, with the meandering nature and everything, and How Heidi, you had mentioned, you know, every you're kind of watching all these characters and you get a chance to watch them breathe. I was kind of curious, have either of you seen her most recent film, Bad Batch? And I was just kind of curious what you guys thought of that.
I sure have seen it, but I'm just going to, you know, I was taught if I don't have anything nice to say, not say anything at all. So I'm just going to hold my tongue.
Yeah, I've heard that. I haven't seen it. I don't have time to watch a lot of new movies, so I just haven't had a chance to watch it. But it was interesting because A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night was her first feature film, and then like right after she got to make like another feature film with all these, you know, like big names and everything.
So I actually don't really hate it as much as I acted like I did just now. I don't like it though. It's a movie. I think what I was most upset about is that the concept of the film was so enticing and interesting to me that I was expecting it to be so much more than it was. That's what it was. So, you know, if I went in with no expectations, I might not have hated it. The acting's not horrible. Keanu Reeves is pretty entertaining in it. Jim Carrey's in it for no good reason at all. Actually, like, his role is like barely, I don't know. Giovanni Ribisi's in it. I mean, like a whole, like you're saying, a bunch of names. Diego Luna, and obviously Jason Momoa is one of the main characters. And he's actually not horrible as well. Although it's funny because Jason Momoa, I guess, despite the fact that he is, you know, a white man from Hawaii. I mean, he's got a bit of a ethnic look to him, so they always have him playing characters that are, like, Hispanic and stuff, despite the fact that he's not, which is always interesting to me. I was like, why didn't you just pick a Hispanic guy? You know, but nonetheless, he's not bad in the film. No one's bad in the film. The acting's not horrible. I think it probably is more of a script issue, but ultimately, I definitely would say I'm excited, even though I don't like that film very much, and I like but don't love the first film that we're the one we're talking about now. What excites me about looking at these two films back to back is, like, somewhere in between the two is probably a masterpiece to me. You know what I mean? Like I think that, like, she's still finding a full voice. I think that if she could tone down the artsiness a little bit from the first one, because that's what I don't love about it, although Blaine obviously loves that, and so maybe it is already a masterpiece for many. I think that, like, somewhere in her next couple films, she's going to hit a spot where I'm just going to be, like, blown away. You know, so that's just me. So
Yeah. I was thinking it's like a feature length art film. And you got to be into it, into that kind of thing to like it. And I was thinking, because that's even, like, with my work. And I do know, like, in the future, you got to kind of tone that down if you're going to start making more commercial type of films.
Yeah. I mean, but, like, I guess, like, your aesthetic works for me a little bit more. Mind you, we haven't gotten there yet, just probably because of my tastes than her aesthetic in Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I think that, what Blaine loved about it is something like, oh, the whole film's in Farsi. It's something that bothered me, because that's not even her native language. And, like,
I was wondering that, yeah.
No, her native language is English.
Yeah, it was filmed in Southern California.
Right. And she actually had the film translate. She translated it herself, but she had to do, like, academic work to translate it, because she doesn't even speak fluent Farsi. So it's like, that's weird and almost on the borderline of, like, pretentious artsy for me. And maybe if I didn't know that, it wouldn't bother me. But, of course, my dumbass looked it up, and now it bothers me. But she's born in England and raised in Miami.
But on the other side,
I don't know.
But Justin, if she did not have that movie translated to Farsi, then we would not have got the joke of Bad City, which is bad, and that right. makes me chuckle.
That is funny. You're right. That is a really fair point.
The dad humor in me can't appreciate that lame joke. So. But what I was saying, I was bringing up the Bad Batch just for the specific reason of, I was curious of how that kind of translated for you guys, and I know you haven't seen it yet, Heidi, but you know, like, of taking that sort of, you know, aesthetic and moving it into not only, you know, a, you know, relatively, it's not a huge budget, but it's still a nice size budget for Girl, and moving into a larger budget with, you know, big Hollywood actors, how that worked, because I'm still trying to figure out what I think about Bad Batch. I know I don't like it, but I remember when it was originally being shown, she was showing a 3.5-hour cut of that film originally. Yeah, but the crazy thing about it is I was hearing from people that it's really good. This is what I kept hearing. That there's.
I wonder, like, if they cut all the wrong stuff.
And that's why I wonder. What I mean? Like, I feel like it's maybe these are. This is, like, the result of someone making this 3-hour epic art flick, like, you know, post-apocalyptic art flick about cannibals and shit, and then almost trying to, in some sort of desperate attempt to make something commercially viable out of it, you know, since they did, you know, invest a lot in her, you know, for those names. But, yeah, no, I'm always curious. Like, As much as I didn't like the hour and 40-minute cut, I'm curious to see what she originally had in there, because I do think she has such a unique voice, and I'm curious what all that filled in the story was, because I don't know. I think her style is so meandering and Girl, and I like how it breathes that way. I'm curious if maybe Bad Batch was a little more like that, and maybe I would have dug spending more time with these unlikable and... as you mentioned before, listening to the offensively affected accent of Jason Momoa would have been a little more endearing. Cause
although, you know, I think some of the stuff that seems to be influential to that movie, to Bad Batch specifically, is stuff I like the post-apocalyptic stuff. Not even, I wouldn't even go like, you know, the obvious like Road Warrior and stuff, but maybe some of the more like obscure titles, because I feel like almost some of those like Italian post-apocalyptic stuff and weird stuff that came out, I feel like that would have been probably stuff that she was more going for the aesthetic of.
Like Bronx as well as Warrior, the, yeah.
Right, right. Like that's a perfect example. Or like, I also think there's a very Yoderowski feel to some of her stuff. Like, it feels like El Topo.
No, that's a good call.
And the thing is, I love El Topo, so it's a weird thing to say about a movie I don't like. But what I mean is, I feel like there's an influence from stuff like El Topo, like Bronx Warrior, and that stuff I dig. So I think that there's something there that she was going for that that I dig. And, you know, I definitely think Girl is a better film than Bad Batch. But like you said, seeing a 3.5-hour cut, which doesn't excite me based on the 1-hour 40-minute cut, but it might have a lot more cool stuff, despite the fact that there might be big periods of me falling asleep. So I don't know.
Maybe that's what you need, is some nap, a few little nap breaks in there.
That's how about a movie that I never felt like I wanted to nap it during? How about Heidi's movie, Dolly Deadly? Let's talk about Dolly Deadly.
Hear that, Mitch? Friends.
What friends?
All I see over here is a bunch of goddamn dogs! What your grandmother says goes. Now sit down!
Benji, go play and take your dolls with you.
Nice dancing, Benji. Keep it up, doll boy.
Come on in, Benji.
What's the matter?
Get it, Max.
The least you can do is go talk to him and try and turn him into some kind of man.
I'm gonna have my revenge.
Revenge? Really?
You gotta treat others how you wanna be treated.
If, like, they're letting their kids play with dolls, it's just not good.
Keep talking that crap.
Blaine, let you, since I butchered Girl Walks Home Alone at Night in my description, why don't you describe Dolly Deadly and then let Heidi kind of jump in and correct you?
No, that's not, sounds like a deal. Okay, a young boy from a trailer park can't take another moment of ridicule from his family and peers. With the support of his beloved dollies, he sets out for blood. Yeah, I read the IMDb again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just read
every
that.
Time. But
she probably knows because she probably wrote the IMDb.
I read that, yeah.
Hey, it's very quick and to the point, but like I mentioned before, this is a film I came across. I was actually right around the time that this was released. I remember I was looking around. I wanted to watch something that I'd never seen before from a filmmaker. I had no idea who they were. Kind of dug around online, saw the name mentioned a few times, actually sent over a message to Heidi and said, hey, can I get a screener for this? And she said, hey, it's on Amazon Prime. So I was like, oh, okay.
So, oh, I did?
Yeah. So
what
I was like,
a douchebag.
No, not at all. Not at all. I was like, because I wanted to review something that wasn't from like the normal like gang of, you know, low budget filmmakers and stuff. I wanted to see something new, but you told me where to find it. So I ran on there. I jumped on it. Not what I was expecting. It was this kind of like super, super trashy, fun, you know, really dark comedy that had, you know, some horror aspects as well as some experimental sides. And like I said, the first time, I remember for the first, like, 30, 40 minutes, it was really, it was a little tough, you know, with the kid, you know, and everything getting picked on. But, like, as soon as I kind of relaxed and got the joke, it stuck with me. And it was something that, you know, I've been a big fan of, I've been a big champion of over the past couple years. You know, one of those movies when people say that they want to, whenever someone, you know, they come across whatever, you know, low-budget horror film that they like, I always try to point them in that direction, because I do think it's something that's so unique that you don't really find in a lot of, you know, kind of these you know, like a lot of these other ones lack some of the polish and pay maybe a little bit too much homage to shit they like. I feel like Dolly Deadly takes that stuff that, you know, which I'm sure you'll tell us about, but some stuff that you like, but puts this unique spin on it that seems, you know, based on what I've seen of your work, is like decidedly you. And I think that's what has always been so impressive to me. And I'm not just kissing up to you, because if you go back to our John Waters episode, you'll hear me kiss up just as much. But
this is true. This is true.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of been my experience with the film. Hey, Heidi, why don't you tell us a little bit about making of the film and kind of what made you want to make this film?
So originally I was co-writing it with a friend. I came up with the idea just because I found this weird doll at the thrift store, and it was originally supposed to be about a creepy doll. But then I thought, you know, oh, it should be owned by a boy. And then I started thinking about a lot of things that have happened with some of my friends. And then my youngest son actually plays Benji, the main character in the movie. And one time I bought him some tap shoes at the thrift store because I thought that would be fun. And he was really excited about them. He wore them to the park. And he came home and changed his shoes. And I asked him what happened. He said some dad was making fun of him at the park and said those were girls' shoes. And I started thinking about, like, what the fuck? He's an adult. Like, why are you messing with a little kid? Just leave him alone. But then I started thinking about, like, that happens a lot, you know, like parents are, you know, they'll talk shit to their kids that they're like, oh, you're acting like a little girl, or, you know, worse things, of course. But so I started thinking about that kind of stuff. And then so Cassandra and I started writing a script. But it started getting way too complicated and too expensive, so I went back through and, like, changed the whole thing. And then as we filmed, when I'm directing, I just change everything. So I was just making stuff up as we went, making scenes up. I made up, like, there's a scene in the laundromat. I just made that up, and we filmed it the next day, like, during production. And I don't know. I don't even really know how I write this stuff. It's just, like, whatever pops into my head, and we just do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, because at least there's that cohesion that if you are coming up with stuff right off the top of your head, I mean, you're being able to, you know, edit and blend it into something that makes sense. And I mean, that's pretty amazing. And with just kind of with what you brought up and with me mentioning, you know, it kind of bothered me is, I mean, all three of us, we're all, you know, parents of boys. And I guess I kind of, when I was listening to that, I'm so worried about my son, you know, kind of losing that innocence of just doing shit they like, in, you know, with, you know, always, you know, worried about some, you know, some asshole dad or some, you know, some, you know, jerky kid at his school telling him, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's girly, or it's, you know, whatever, you know, terrible little boys say to each other. You know, it's like, I think that was part of the sort of that dread effort. So I was like, oh God, you know, my son, he's so sweet. He's just, you know, when I was watching the movie, my son was like 6 years old, and I'm like, oh, he's so sweet. He's so kind. Oh, I hope he doesn't grow up to be an asshole because of, you know, pricks in the neighborhood, you know.
That was a big thing in the movie, is like how people don't understand how traumatizing their actions can be toward other people. You can really fuck a person up. You can ruin a person you know, by the way they've been treated, and then they grow up to be a certain way. Because Justin, who plays Benji, he did get bullied all the time at school. He's 13, and actually he has friends at school for the first time ever. And so it's like he's had breakdowns, and like that's crazy. He's watching a little child be depressed and have like, you know, mental breakdowns, you know, and saying like I'm ugly. The kids tell me that like I'm, you know, stupid, and that I'm like all of these things. Where it's like, who the fuck is like, who are these parents? Like,
right.
Why do these kids even act like this? That's so stupid. But they don't realize, like, you know, you're being mean to somebody, and like, okay, whatever, you don't think it's a big deal, but they hang on to that stuff, and it kind of, a lot of times, it doesn't make you stronger. It like shapes you into this like thing that you never had to be. Like, I don't know. It's really sad. So.
Yeah.
I completely get that too. And by the way, I just wanted to give you a little kudos on naming your son Justin. It's a great name.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and it was actually kind of hard editing and watching it, because I'm watching him and he's so little in that movie. He's 13 now. But he's like, when he's getting like bullied, my mom watched the movie and it made her cry, like when he was getting the kids were putting the dress on him and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Cuz that's her grandson, and she was like, "Stop being mean to him." But it's his brother. His brother plays the bully boy, Kenny. So it was interesting. It's kind of cool to have that movie because it's like a living photo album, you know, when they were little.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because you answered my next question, because I was curious of like of how it was, you know, being his mother and watching one of your boys essentially bully the other. But yeah, no, that's all. And that's why I kind of wanted to get into, because I do feel like that's one of those things about the movie that makes it, it does give it that, it makes it, it adds a certain level of realness to, you know, this film that's so, it's kind of steeped in, you know, a hyper realism that, that, you know, where, I don't know, it kept me grounded during the film. So I that's why I was curious about that. But Justin, this was your first time ever seeing the movie. What was kind of your vibe off of it?
You know, I don't know how to like summarize how I felt, because I think a lot of what you guys are saying is like all the emotions running through me too. I'm also a father of boys. So I, you know, like we're all commiserating over, you know, raising boys here. You know, and I think about like the difference of the eras that I grew up in and now and stuff. And like, and I'm thankful that today there's more acceptance for certain differences than there were, like, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, like, you know, the way, you know, in an era where we grew up throwing the word fag around like it was nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, we did, you know, and up until the time, like, you know, until I hit high school, that was, you know, and then finally somewhere in the late 90s, we started realizing that it's like, it's not okay to say that. But, like, that was, like, a normal thing, you know? I mean, I watch movies from those eras, like, my favorite movies in the world, like Monster Squad, and they throw that word around like it's nothing, because it was nothing at the time. You know, and you just think about that in the context, and like, I'm thankful that today is a different era, but at the same time, like, it's a different era, but there's still a lot of that men are men mentality in a lot of people that grew up around our age and older, especially, that's like thrown at people. Like you're saying, a father making fun of a kid for wearing tap shoes, a kid who was, what, at the time, under 10 years old?
Yeah, oh yeah, no. He was like 6, and he was having so much fun with them. Let the kid have fun. Yeah.
That's exactly it. And who the hell cares? And you know what? If your son became an amazing tap dancer, you ever heard of somebody named Fred Astaire? Fuck you, dude. But anyway, you know, I'm just saying, you know, like that, but that's a thing, you know, that's a thing. You know, if my son wants to go out and do ballet, he can go freaking do ballet. You know, but at the same time, like, there still is a stigma there that kids have to live with. And unfortunately for, you know, the character in your film, for Benji, that stigma didn't just come from the outside. It came from his frickin' family, who just ridiculed him and treated him like shit. And the only person who seemed to give a shit about him and what he liked was his mom, and she was gone.
Yeah.
You know, so he didn't have anyone to protect him and let him be him without being ridiculed. You know, yeah. and that's your safe space. Your family is your safe space, and he didn't have that.
I think that's what got me. Yeah. A lot of times, so many people, they don't have that safe. It is the people who are supposed to be their support system and keep them safe are the ones that are like really, you know, the worst to them. And that happens so much. And so I saw one of the reviews on Amazon and it was like, this 17-year-old that made this movie is an edgelord. And I had to look it up. So I didn't know what that meant. And it means like, oh, pretending to think like the world's a fucked up place and like all this stuff to be cool. And I was like, no, it's not fake. I'm not pretending. Like, this is really what I think. And
you know what's so funny is it just shows how out of touch people are when they use words to describe you that you don't even know what they mean. Like, that's pretty great that you had to look that up. That makes me just love it.
Is it a cool thing? Is it like science fiction or something? Like Dungeon?
Right.
I didn't know what it was. I don't know. I like to take shitty things and make a joke about it. A lot of people who watch the movie, every time we had a screening, because we had a theater tour in 2016, people would come up to me and they would say, like, I know those people. And I'm like, yeah, I think they're everywhere. Because somebody also commented, like, in a review saying, oh, she's putting down people from the South or all these things. Like, No, there's these kind of people everywhere. I'm writing about people I grew up around.
Yeah, because it's like, because dirtbags are indigenous to the world.
So I was curious. I'm like, why did you think, like, immediately think, oh, that's people from the South? I'm from Northern California, and they're there, and everywhere I've been, everyone's like, oh, yeah, we must have had the same kind of upbringing, or, you know.
Right. It probably just means that person who was complaining grew up in the South and knew those people and didn't realize that they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah, they're
everywhere. They are, obviously.
And being a proud Southerner, we do have a lot of them. I do take my son to a park on the weekends where there are numerous families that look nearly identical to the family in Dolly Deadly. So
I only live 25 miles outside of downtown Philadelphia, and yet there's a reason this state is often referred to as Pennsylvania. And at only 25 miles from downtown, you know, there is my share of this kind of people as well. And don't get me wrong, these people exist in the city. They just don't live in trailer parks in the city. They live in other, you know, whatever. They exist everywhere, you know, and that you're right. You're right. This, you know, I work in the people who listen to the podcast have probably heard me reference at least a few times. I work in the Department of Corrections. I work, you know, in prison rehabilitation, specifically in people when they get home from jail. And the thing is, the reason I bring that up is just like what we're saying about people not having safe spaces, not having families to save them and give them that nurturing. That's the biggest problem for half these guys I deal with is they didn't have that.
Yeah.
And like, so when they were faced with these assholes who did things and you and I and whoever else went home and had a shoulder to cry on, they didn't. Or their shoulder told them to go fucking sock the guy in the face, and then that happened. They got freaking locked up. You know, it's there's so much about these kind of stories that is so dead on with the fact that, like, families are needed.
Yeah.
Guidance in our life is needed. You know, you need to have somebody to lean on. And, like, that's what affected me about this movie was, like, I never once, like, you know, as he, you know, when he becomes what he becomes and he starts killing, I don't blame him. I don't blame him. You know, I'm not saying that it's right what he's doing. It's definitely not right. But who was there to teach him otherwise?
Exactly. I just wanted to show, like, well, what can happen if it doesn't make you stronger? Like, that kind of stuff made me stronger, but I still feel like shit all the time.
Right.
I just keep it in. I don't, like, freak out or anything, but, like, not everyone's tough. Like, you know, I wanted to write about, like, what if you didn't get tougher? What if you got really pushed too far or, you know, really damaged and you just like did these kinds of things that like you were talking about that happens, you know, what people turn into or what Benji does. I just wanted to, I don't know, write about that because I'm an edgelord and it's like important.
I think I might advertise this episode as like the Grindhouse Messiah talks to edgelord Heidi Moore. Oh Lord, it's so great. Yeah.
But one thing I did want to mention, because I know we kind of got into the other side of the movie, the more serious stuff, but I don't want anyone to not know that this movie's also fucking hilarious.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't know, because I started being like, is this funny? Like, when we were editing it, I'm like, can anyone tell that this is supposed to be funny? Like, no.
Right, because to me, like, the stuff that you do put in there, I mean, a lot of humor, I mean, at least land with me. I love the opening with the mother. I love the fact that she gives Doritos to a baby.
Yeah.
That for some reason, that really tickles me. Because of course, babies would love Doritos. But
oh, yeah. We gave that baby Doritos, and I told the mom. She's like, oh. Like, oh, no, I didn't even think of it. I'm so sorry. Like, you right. gave your baby Doritos.
It reminded me of the first time when my son was walking around and picked up a diet soda I was leaving around, and the joy on his face when I came in and he was drinking soda. You know, it's like, oh, I'm a terrible father, but look how happy he looks. But also, I wanted to ask you about what is all the shit playing on TV? Because that's like some of the funniest stuff to me in the movie. But.
Some of it are my short films.
Okay.
One's one of my friend's music videos, another's like a clip from another friend's movie. But if you're talking about the weird guy.
Yes, that's like, what I'm talking about.
Yes, that's what I thought you might be talking about. His name is Gorachan Saha. He's on Facebook. He's from India. And he really wants to be an actor, and he will contact any and every independent filmmaker and want to be in their movies. And so he had been contacting me for like 3 years, and I just didn't have anything for him to do. And then finally I was like, okay, well, he can film himself and we'll put it on the TV. 'Cause he'll film himself, whatever you want, he'll film it. You can put it in your movie. So I was like, okay, fine, Gora, pretend like you're fighting a ghost. Okay, and I will use that footage in the movie. So what he was doing in there, he was fighting a ghost. And I made a mini, like a 5-minute little bio about him. There's like a mini documentary on the Retro Productions YouTube page. And he tells his story. But yeah, that's Gora. And so if anyone's listening and they're a filmmaker, if you want little snippets like that, just contact him and he'll film himself doing whatever you want him to do.
Oh, that just made
is
my day.
The documentary you made on him called Gora the Man and the Legend?
Yes.
Okay, I just stumbled across it. Okay, I'm gonna have to watch that when we're done.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. He that's great. I looked him up while we were talking, and his credits are very limited, but Dolly Dudley's on there, of course, and apparently he played a character in some TV show called Vincent Cosmos the Time Thief.
Oh.
After your movie, and by a TV show, it looks like, well, it looks interesting.
Yeah, oh,
we'll
yeah.
just go with that. It's a science fiction show, and he's on, like, several episodes of it. So, 6 episodes as yes. Boris Craven. So now I'm adding, like, my queue is growing because I feel like I need to see that now.
Okay.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, the humor, some of the humor in Stark stuff like that doesn't always land with me the first time I watch it. Some of it does, and I definitely chuckled a few times, but I also cringed enough at different points where I probably missed things. and I don't necessarily have the same John Waters sensibility that Blaine does, so I don't know if I missed some of that, but TV Guy, as he's credited in your film, he was phenomenally hilarious, so there you go.
Yeah, on the Blu-ray, which isn't available right now, but there's the special features, which is like the full like videos of what he sent me. like walking around.
Oh man, I'm excited for that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's definitely interesting.
It's exactly what you expect it to be, based on.
Yeah, there you go.
No, that's awesome. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, with all the people that you cast in the film, I mean, were these like people that you knew personally? How did you kind of get in touch with, you know, like the kind of the main players of the film? Because like I know like Jay Sosnicki, I know that I've seen him he was in Interior Leather Bar, wasn't he? The Franco film. Yeah, because I was like, he looks so familiar because I believe I met him when that premiered at the Atlanta Film Festival a couple years ago. So I was kind of curious, you know, how many of the people you like already knew and who you casted in the film.
Well, so a lot of the people are friends of mine. Like the Justin and Lars, Benji and Kenny, those are my kids. The other kids in the movie are my friend Margaret's kids. My friend Margaret's she's in the beginning of the movie. She's wearing a neck brace and she's getting her makeup done. She still hates me for making her wear a muumuu and a neck brace. So Jay was a friend of Cassandra's. He was the co-writer. And Cassandra, she's in the movie too a little bit. She's one of the makeup clients. My sister's the makeup client who pays with the EBT card.
Yes. And
the baby is my niece. So it's just like a lot of friends where I'm like, you're doing it. Like, so, and so Benji's mom, and she also plays the blue doll, is my friend Dana, and she's in like a lot of my movies. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of friends, like, cause now there's people knowing who I am and wanting to be in the movies. But before, like no one wanted to be in anything. And so I'd have to like make my friends do it.
No, fair enough. And I mean, and everybody gives good performances. That's why I was kind of curious. I saw, you know, he was the only name that I, you know, just recognized outside of, you know, seeing your name there as, you know, I believe you're Laundromat Girl.
Oh, yes, I was in Laundromat.
And then, but no, that's awesome.
That's a good big role, Laundromat Girl. It's I like the character's name. It's deep.
That's how you get a SAG card. But,
but yeah. Kim plays Grandma Mitzi. She is a friend of Margaret's, and she does local theater where I was living. And she's great. She was really good at being a horrible, mean grandma.
Yes, she is.
More or less a horrible human being. She's just a bad person.
Yeah, and she's very so dedicated, and she's you know, it took 3 years to film that fucking thing. And she stood by and, you know, till the end. So I am really grateful for everybody for sticking in, like sticking to it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Well, I know we've talked a lot about the film. I mean, everybody go out and make sure to get it off of VOD and check out Dolly Deadly. But you've got a bunch of other stuff coming up. I've seen a work print of one of them. But tell everybody kind of what you got going on here coming up in the near future.
Well, in the near future, I have a feature-length documentary coming out called More Blood. That should be finished by the end of this month. And I'm probably going to mainly release it on VOD. And it's about why society enjoys watching death and gore for entertainment. I just kind of talked to a lot of filmmakers and horror fans and would just like talk about like why they enjoy it and why they think other people do. It's just kind of like a fun conversation. It's pretty interesting. It seems like everyone has a different answer of why they enjoy it. But it really like comes down to a lot of like functionalism. It serves some type of purpose for them.
No, absolutely, and yeah, and that's the film that I got a chance to see, and yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I mean, like you said, it adds such a huge conversation, and it kind of attacks a little bit of that ethereal side of entertainment that doesn't always come into play, where there are a lot of these like horror documentaries. I like watching horror movies. What's your favorite horror movie? Where this film kind of goes more into an actual dialogue of what people are reacting to on, you know, a physical, I guess emotional as well as spiritual level. I really enjoyed that, and I'm excited to see the final print of that. And tell me if I'm wrong, but you have a sequel for Dolly Deadly coming up here, if I'm not wrong.
Oh yes, I do. But real quick about I just want to mention we made that with like no budget, zero budget. I'm interested to see what people think about it, because I had people from all around the world and the country in the movie, and they filmed themselves while I interviewed them via video chat.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I was curious because a lot of it did look like it was video chat, but it was framed. Everything was framed well, where it didn't look like.
Say they would have me on their. I'd be on the computer, but they'd be filming with their own cameras.
Oh, okay.
Two people used their phone, but it was like, yeah, they would film it with their own camera, and then I would be off to the side, you know, on the computer.
Oh, okay. I was curious. I didn't want to, you know, go into the nuts and bolts of your movie, but I was curious, still thinking, okay, is this, what is this being shot from? Because I'm not good enough to watch, you know, trailers and look for what things are shot on, but I was just curious all the time because it is so clear and crisp. But I'm a big fan of that one as well.
Well, thank you. So yeah, Dolly Deadly 2, or it's Kill Dolly Kill. It's a horror rock musical, and it's the sequel to Dolly Deadly 1. Benji is a grown up. He's an adult now, and he's now Dolly Deadly, not Benji anymore. And
so, like we saw at the end of the previous film, he's becoming Dolly Deadly.
He's Dolly Deadly now, right. And somebody watched the first one and liked it so much, he wrote the sequel. His name's Tom Commissar, and he's one of the co-owners of H&M Films. And so he wrote the sequel, and he contacted me and to see if I was interested, and he asked if it was okay if it was a rock musical, because he's a musician. And I was like, yes, of course, that's okay. That's like been a dream of mine. I love musicals. And so we filmed the first half in Las Vegas. Actually, Troma picked it up, and so they're producing it, which just means they're just kind of behind it, and they'll be releasing it. And but it's really cool. Lloyd Kaufman's really into the movie and everything. And so we shot half of it in Las Vegas in November. We're getting ready to shoot the second half in April in Indiana, because that's where the guys from H&M Films are based. But it was so incredible. We just had like people coming in from all over, and they're just like such great performers. It was just so fun the whole time.
No, that's awesome, and I'm happy to see that you guys are at Troma. Shameless plug for us. If you do love Troma, go back and listen to our interview with Lloyd Kaufman. But yeah, no, I am super excited to see that. And do you have any idea of when that's going to be releasing, or is that just too hard to tell at this point?
Yes, I think it's too hard to tell because we're filming the second half in April, in May, but once it's done, it's up to Troma when they're going to release it. So I'm just not positive, but I'm really excited because the songs, I just listened to the songs again yesterday morning, and they're so good. I just can't wait. I wish I could just post the songs all over the place and just show everyone right now, but it's going to be good. And there's another trailer park scene. And the reason why I do trailer parks is not for, like, it's just only for the fact that I personally am obsessed with trailer parks.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I looked up Tom Commissar, and he's also the writer of such classics as House of Horrors, House of Horrors 2, and House of Horrors 2.5. So
yes.
That's good.
Yeah. I've seen House of Horrors.
Oh, I know you have. There's no doubt in my mind that you've seen that.
That's the one with the clowns.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yes. No. Oh. Okay. That is a good. I like. That's a good combination.
I'm giving you a hard time, but guess what? I've seen it too.
So. Awesome.
Yeah. It's incredible. Like teaming up with HMM Films. I don't know. It's just been so great. Like meeting after Dolly Deadly came out, I just got to meet so many people, and I've been able to start collaborating with all of these people who I admire, who are just so talented, and we get to come together and make something even more incredible than we could have made by ourselves.
No, I think that is awesome. No, we're excited to see the films when they come out. So thank you so much for coming on. One thing we do at the end of the show is, and we're doing kind of a special segment for Women in Horror Month, we do like to do a quick recommendation. So if you want to join us and you have a film you want to recommend everybody, you feel free to hop in.
Okay.
All right. Hey, so Justin, why don't you start us off with your recommendation for Women in Horror Month?
So I narrowed it down to two directors that I wanted to highlight, and of course I've only narrowed it down to three films, so I'm just going to spout them all off. The two directors are Mary Harron and Karen Kusama. Mary Harron, specifically the films American Psycho, which everybody knows about. Great, great film. I'll tell everybody to watch it. And honestly, maybe an unpopular opinion, I don't know, but I fucking love her film, and I don't like Bret Easton Ellis' book. Just saying. But you know, so and maybe it's because her voice is a little bit less annoying and misogynistic than Bret Easton Ellis's, but it is what it is. Otherwise, though, another film that I didn't get a lot of love, a more recent film of hers, The Moth Diaries. I'm a big fan of that film.
Really?
It reminds me a lot of Phenomena.
Okay.
And it's actually one of my favorite Argento films. Another weird, unpopular opinion of mine. You know, I hate Suspiria. I'm a fucking weirdo. But I absolutely love Phenomena. But anyway, so now I'm spouting off all types of weird stuff. Two films by Mary Harron that I love, those two. And the other one, Karen Kusama, I think The Invitation is a fucking masterpiece. If you haven't seen The Invitation, I think it's only from 2016, so it's not, or 2015 maybe, so it's not an old film. It's very much a tight thriller where you don't exactly know what's going on throughout the film, and then gets a huge gut punch at the end. And I think about that film on a weekly basis, despite the fact I haven't watched it in a year and a half. It just hits me. That film is brilliant. And so three movies that I'll recommend, with the top recommendation being The Invitation. There you go.
Okay. Heidi, do you have a recommendation you'd like to lend our listeners?
Well, if you like weird movies, I suggest Model Hunger by Debbie Rochon. I don't know. It's just really, there's a lot about like body image and aging and, you know, what society expects from people, like from women. And I don't know. It was really powerful to me. So, and then there's revenge and some weird vore kind of stuff going on. I liked it.
No, that's awesome. And I know we had talked just briefly off air, but yeah, I'm excited to see Lynn Lowry getting back into movies, who I'm a huge fan of, and also another transplanted Atlantan as well. So yeah, no, I definitely want to check that out. My pick this week is from one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, and that's Doris Wishman, who's mainly known for doing a lot of nudie cuties, sexploitation films, especially her movies with Chesty Morgan, which a lot of people will know as Deadly Weapons and Double Agent 73, which are basically just weird sexploitation flicks about basically a woman with gigantic breasts who utilizes them in deadly ways. But the film I wanted to bring up was technically her last feature film that she made, which is called A Night to Dismember. It is kind of a piece of shit in the best sort of way. It's a lot.
That is honestly one of the, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's honestly one of the best titles ever.
Oh, it's fantastic, and it plays on its it's set, you know, I believe in the year it came out in, I think it came out in 83, but it's set in 86. It kind of takes place over the course of one, like, just disgusting day in this weird town called Woodmire Lake. And there's these different murders that go on throughout. And for some reason, the whole film is basically told through this voiceover. What works about it is a wholly unique experience. I can't really compare it to anything else because it is so strange. It's one of these films that I do hope gets a nice 2K scan and a nice Blu-ray so we eventually kind of see it, because it's shot so so quickly and cheaply. A lot gets lost in bad lighting, but it's definitely her last kind of great film, and it's something to watch, and it really she just was so far ahead of everyone. We've talked about, you know, Roberta Findlay and these other women who kind of bullied their ways through the exploitation and pornography film of, you know, not just in front of the camera, but on the other side. And Doris Wishman has just got a huge list of fun stuff to look through. I mean, you go through her softcore stuff that she did, like A Taste of Flesh, My Brother's Wife, then up to her weird documentary, Let Me Die a Woman, that is about basically gender reassignment surgeries. And it's so bizarre with these like weird unsolved mysteries style recreations, and then into even her hardcore work with Satan Was a Lady, and then her remake of that film right before she passed called Satan Was a Lady as well. So super amazing trailblazer who kind of did it all in her 90 years. So just wanted to highlight her this February. But yeah, Heidi, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us about, you know, your movies, as well as a movie that two of us really love and one of us kind of likes. But yeah, let everyone know where they can find you on the social medias out there.
Okay. Well, on Instagram, if you like, you can find More Blood. It's just More Blood Movie, and then Dolly Deadly Movie on Instagram. If you want to find me personally, my name on Instagram is The Coolest Heidi. And then Facebook, you can find me on Heidi Moore or Wretched Productions. You can find Dolly Deadly, Kill Dolly Kill, More Blood. They're all on Facebook. I don't really know how to use Twitter, so but I'm on there, Wretched Productions. But I'm not really, I never go on there.
Well, no, I understand not knowing how to use Twitter. I just use it to try to get Gucci Mane to come on the show. That's essentially the only reason I use Twitter.
Yeah, he just tweeted Gucci Mane again today. I get added in, you know, in all these tweets, and I'm like, man, Gucci's gonna hate us, but it's all right.
Hey, well, in all fairness, Gucci LaFlamme is very busy this time of year, but. Awesome. Let's end the show there. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We'll be seeing you guys back here in a couple weeks. Peace.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films. The way I kill a bitch, that shit scares me. Your mama choosing, but she only scares you. She wanna go, but I think that she's scared.
Gucci, go.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films.
I will.
The way I kill a bitch, that shit is scary.
Gucci,
your mama choosing, but she ain't that scary shit.
I talk trash like Gary Pay, my dope jump like Sean Kemp. Need to high Perry Mason, cause I just caught a M. Cook my dope fast forward, sell lean in slow motion. 4 a.m. still going, 8 a.m. still smoking. Caught a charge and beat it. Gucci man, I'm undefeated. Red bottoms on all my hoes, all my bitches are so conceited. Front flip, I'm flipping bricks. Back flip, you hustle back. Your girlfriend is unattractive. Could her, but I didn't smash her. Four eyes with these Gucci glasses. Trap school, better take some classes. Algebra, I didn't pass it. Buttermilk got down the fastest. Rush hour, I'm stuck in traffic. Kush hour, I'm passing gas. Ace of Spades straight out the bottle. Gucci man, don't do the slashes.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films. The way I kill a bitch, that shit is scary.
she on the scale shit. She wanna go, but I think that she's scared.
Gucci.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films. The way I kill a bitch, that shit'll scare me. Your mama choosing, but she on the scale shit. She wanna go, but I think that she's scared. Bitch.
I killed the parking lot, I think I'm Michael Myers. My room so fat, but I got these little skinny tires. They lock me up and put me on probation, nigga. Way I chase that white girl, they think I'm Jason, nigga. I'm all in your dreams like I'm Freddy Krueger. But I'm not Freddy, baby, call me Freddy Mueller. I need to go to rehab, I'm a drug abuser. I drink so much cough syrup, they think I got the flu. Smoke so much kush, I might need an organ donor. Another set of lungs, cause I'm a heavy smoker. Pop so many bottles, need another liver. And I don't plan on stopping, cause I'm not a squirrel.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films. The way I kill a bitch, that shit'll scare me. The mama choosing, but she on that scary shit. She wanna go, but I think that she's scared of
Gucci.
We don't make pornos, we make horror films. The way I kill a bitch, that shit'll scare me. The mama choosing, but she on that scary shit. She wanna go, but I think that she's scared of bitch.
Crazy.